Welcome to the inquiry session. Inquiry is one of the factors of awakening. And I'll take a few moments to explain the form. You'll see that there's a cushion here. That's for one of you. And the invitation is that you come with a question perhaps that's arisen from your practice. Or it may be that you have an experience that you would like to explore. It's not that you ask a question and I give a 20-minute reply. Not usually, anyway. It's a dialogue. And those of you listening are participating in the dialogue in the sense that your quiet listening is helping the inquiry unfold. So you are asked to listen both outwardly to what's been said, but also to really listen inwardly to the responses of your own heart and mind as the inquiry goes on. Very often the person who's inquiring is asking a question that you may have asked for yourself, in which case the inquiry will perhaps resonate rather deeply. Sometimes the inquiry reaches a natural end. Sometimes the inquiry ends with more questions than we began, and the inquiry continues after the session finishes. People report often that the inquiry has gone on for weeks or months, this way of questioning. When we inquire, we're really asking a question of our heart and mind, if you like. It's not simply thinking about. The purpose of the inquiry is freedom for all, those listening and those speaking. At any time, you may say thank you and leave, and at any time, I may say thank you or ring the bell and you also leave. The session's also being recorded. If you wish me to turn the recorder off, then just say so. And at the end of the retreat, if you don't wish your inquiry to be on the Tovenaar website, then you let the managers know. In between each inquiry, there's a quiet minute or two. Then I'll ring the bell and invite the next person to come. So let's sit for a minute. Yes, anybody? Yes, come. There was somebody at the back, I think. No? I was just waving to a fly. Anybody? Welcome. And if you'd say your name at the beginning for my benefit. Did you turn it on?
No. My name is Yaakov. So I practice a pretty short time in months.
Yes.
And At the same time, I feel like being in a meaningful process while meditating and bringing the Dharma to my life. And at the same time, while sitting and living the life, I feel some sadness and misery because of the understanding of how much I was walking suffering in the world and also bringing suffering to others.
Okay.
So I would like to hear about it.
Okay. So tell me a little more about the experience. Tell me a little more about the experience that you have of suffering.
Well, so I think I was very, and of course in some way also till today, but very tense inside of me.
Yes.
And in some way the circles were, you know, it was affected. I was making others the same thing and vice versa, you know.
Okay. So since you've been meditating, what's happened to that feeling of tension?
So it reduced more and more.
Yes. This is the good news. So with practice, the tension reduces. What was fueling the tension?
I think self-criticism and lack of self-love.
Ah, there you go. Okay. So having seen that they are the causes for the suffering, the lack of self-love and the tendency to criticize oneself, what shifts have you made?
I was able to reach people more directly.
Okay. How did you do that?
Dancing. Talking to random people.
Yes.
Taking care of pets.
Yes. So you did it through joy and kindness.
Yeah.
Okay. What happened to the self-criticism?
There is no need of it.
Ah. So this is the wisdom of the Dharma, isn't it? We see the I thought arises and finds fault inwardly.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the self-criticisms that you experienced?
I don't know. About any subject, even the little details, daily details, and how much I achieved in life, things like that.
So you found fault inwardly.
Mm-hmm.
So you weren't good enough. You didn't achieve enough.
Mm-hmm.
Do you also project that outwardly?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Say a little more about this movement of mind.
So I think because I felt inside all these, bad things for myself, so I kind of, you know, it affects, yeah.
Hmm.
It's, any meeting with somebody will raise this from both sides. That's what I felt.
Hmm. So you felt that you judged the other.
Mm-hmm.
Say more about this tendency to judge and criticize.
I was raised this way, so.
Yes, of course. It's a conditioned response, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we learn to find fault,
mm-hmm.
both inwardly and outwardly. It's a kind of ill will. It's an expression of ill will.
Mm-hmm.
And the antidote, of course, is, as you said, it's love.
Right.
It's kindness.
Mm-hmm.
It's friendliness. So now in your relationships outwardly,
it becomes better.
Yes.
I found more peace inside and outside.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the good in things in others.
Mm-hmm.
And I like life more.
Ah, this is an important point. He said, I like life more. Okay. So do you have a question about this?
Well, yeah, because there is the positive side. We just talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started with the bad side of it because I feel so sad for myself and for the others, for all the suffering from the past.
Yes.
And in some way also in the present.
Okay, so this is regret. The mind goes to the past and there's regret about some of our actions. We see that some of the unwise things we've done have hurt others. Is there anybody in the room who has not hurt somebody else? Speak now. Exactly, of course. We have all behaved in ways where we wish we had not. Ways that brought hurt or pain to another. So, what's the question?
I think there is no question anymore.
No question anymore. Fantastic. Say more about the ending of the questions.
I think I need to let it be and enjoy the process and understanding the suffering is part of the world, my own life, and like there will be suffering in my life like in the past, but I can enjoy the process of reducing it and bring wisdom to my way of life.
Precious. This is beautiful. So, what quality of the heart do you need to cultivate now? Having seen and understood, what quality of the heart do you need to cultivate?
Openness to experience and accepting everything with love.
You heard it here. So, having said all of that and having reported the fruits of the practice, the benefit of the practice, is there anything in your life that remains unresolved?
Yes, of course. I think different things, but I think mostly it's difficult to bring it to words, but I think it's building real intimacy, I think.
Ah, okay. So, really meeting someone and being able to share rather deeply in an intimate way, in a personal relationship.
Yeah.
Do you have a partner or what's your situation in life?
I used to have for 4 years a boyfriend and we shared life, but
yes.
Nowadays I can say we didn't really share health intimacy.
Yes.
And neither with anyone else. I think, like, I guess there were parts of healthy and good things in different relationships in my life, but not as a total, not as a whole and healthy thing.
Okay. So what would need to change in you now in order to have a very close, intimate relationship with somebody you love?
So I think what happening while I'm meditating and following the Dharma is that I find the intimacy with myself and connected to myself. And this way I hope to reach the people around me the same way.
Okay. So accepting yourself fully, which can include your sexual preference, accepting that. Realizing that we all hurt others sometimes. So we have basic kindness and forgiveness of oneself, forgiveness of another. Bringing those qualities to relationship is a precious beginning. Is there anything that you see in yourself that might make it difficult? Because we can say we want to have an open, intimate relationship.
Yeah, I think I really try to stick to my free spirit, and I believe that any relationship from any kind, in work, with people, any kind where I live, is kind of trap me and block my free spirit.
Okay. Say that again for me.
It's like getting in any kind of connection with somebody or with something. I think it makes me feel like there are boundaries, and then I try to run away from these boundaries.
Okay. So you're looking for close connection.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for freedom of heart.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking to for your spirit to feel really free. And yet you know in relationship that sometimes there's compromise. Sometimes we come up against difficult feelings and issues. Perhaps the other person has slightly different views and values. So all of these need to be met in relationship. What crosses the boundaries of differences in views and ideas?
Love.
Yeah, indeed. So when we really love, then that natural freedom can begin to burst forth.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I wish you well. He's open to love. Yes, anybody? Yes, come. Welcome. What's your name?
My name is Naama. Hello.
Hello.
I raised my hand.
Yes.
Because I am worried.
Yes.
Of the tension between equanimity and peace.
Mm.
And like numbness and Adishut.
Indifference.
I feel like I am practicing equanimity and I feel like I'm good at it. But then when, let's say, bad things happened or extreme or I don't know, I feel like I am, you know, shut.
Closing down?
Yes. And I feel like I am confusing between closing down and equanimity sometimes. I find it hard to differ. So I came with that question.
Okay, so with equanimity, we are standing in the midst of all things. In the middle of all things. Standing very near to all things, the pleasant, the unpleasant, the difficult and the lovely. When do you notice that you begin to contract and shut down?
When I'm afraid.
Yes, when there's fear. Do you understand that equanimity is not indifference? Equanimity, standing steady in the face of all things, is really different from indifference.
And what's indifference? I'm sorry.
Okay. Are you clear about that? Okay.
Maybe I'm not, but now you're saying it, I am.
Yes, okay. So tell me about the contraction that you feel in some circumstances.
I fear of being hurt.
Yes.
I fear of losing things I own.
Yes.
It's like my body and my voice are closed.
Yes. Where in the body do you feel the contraction?
Maybe here, maybe all over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's start with here. Okay, so just close your eyes and put the attention there. Do you feel any sense of contraction? Okay. Just track that sensation with great kindness for me. What are you experiencing?
I want to cry.
Yes. Yes. Vulnerability. Just stay with the sensations now. What is happening?
Yeah, maybe I'm shy because of the situation.
Ah, so there's a bit of fear in relationship to everybody watching you.
Right.
Okay, this is the perfect chance to practice equanimity without contracting. It's the perfect situation. Okay. Again, just tracking the sensations, that contraction there. When you track and are really lovingly steady with the actual sensations, what happens?
Maybe some relief.
Ah, okay. So the sensations begin to settle or
flow around my body.
So the contraction itself ceases. When the contraction ceases, what happens to the fear? The fear that I'll lose something, the fear that I'll be hurt, the fear they'll judge me, the fear they won't like me.
I'll melt a little.
Yes, yes. Yes. So with equanimity, our task is to stand with all things, to be steady in the face of our fear, the fear of being hurt, the fear of loss, when we're numb, what are we doing?
Yeah, we're not feeling.
Yeah. So when we're numb, we're switching off, we're turning away, we're no longer steady. Numbness can sometimes appear as equanimity. We think we're being really steady and unmoved, but actually what's happening is we're withdrawing and shutting down and switching off and avoiding. And sometimes we want to avoid that which we fear will be painful. Right? So there is the kind of seed of the switching off, the turning away, the not really quite looking, not quite having the courage to be with the difficult. I see that you're not looking out there.
Why should I?
Uh-huh. It could be good practice. What happens when you look out there? Yes. Yes. So there's some self-consciousness. The vulnerability kicks in a little bit. But are you contracting from that or not? Yeah. Is there a contraction or not? Right now? No. So right there is how to meet the things that we find challenging. Just like that. Yeah. So not switching off. Not switching off. Not contracting. Not pretending to be really cool when you're not. Not pretending to be even. Because this is a misunderstanding of equanimity. Equanimity is steadiness, but it doesn't mean we don't feel. It doesn't mean we don't we still have the whole range of human feelings. We are just steady with them. And we're steady with them because we're aware. Right. Okay. So next time you're in a difficult situation where you notice the contraction, you notice this tension here, what are you going to do?
Listen and be with it for a moment.
Yes. So pause, be steady with it, and then what?
Follow. Mm-hmm. Wherever
track.
It goes.
Ask yourself what the belief is that's fueling it. What is the fear? What is the difficulty? And usually it becomes clear very easily. And then you're in the position of being able to act, not bound to withdrawing, not bound to shutting down that habit pattern of mind, because we develop habitual ways of dealing with difficult issues. And so the pattern becomes entrenched. But our practice is to really see it right then and there and do something different. Not shut down. To allow the vulnerability. So not shutting down in the face of fear. Not pretending everything's okay when it's not. So if something really wasn't okay, what would you do?
Depends what happened. I would do something about it. I don't know.
Yeah, so you could speak about it. You could talk to somebody. You don't just have to shut down, withdraw, and be silent and pretend it's okay when it isn't.
True.
So there's a new way of approaching. Going, okay, I can look at this. I don't have to withdraw. I can stand near and amid all things with steadiness.
And act.
And act. Act with what?
attention. I don't know.
What would loosen it, this tendency? Act with attention, yes.
Care.
Yes.
The will to things to be better or right, I don't know.
To have the courage to make a shift. To embrace the new. To do something different.
And to face something different, maybe.
Okay.
Or new, or I don't know.
Yes. Yes. I see your face light up as you say that. There's the possibility of a new way of being. Where we're not withdrawing, we're not shutting down, we're not switching off. And sometimes if we have a habit of switching off, it can be that the Vedana is the in-between Vedana. So sometimes there can be disinterest. Would that be a factor?
I don't think I understood completely.
Okay. Sometimes when there's the in-between Vedana, the in-between feeling tone of our experience, what we do is we aren't very interested in that. It's not exciting. It doesn't grab our attention. So we tend to ignore it and we can be a bit bored. And then we become numb and then we switch off. This is one pattern that I've noticed. Inwardly and outwardly. So sometimes we just check that. If we find ourselves being indifferent, we go, oh, am I interested in what's going on around or not? Am I curious? Am I looking with interest? Or am I just being dull? Okay. So thank you for your exploration. And just to be clear, equanimity is not indifference. You understand?
I knew that this is why I came.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is why I came.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's very good that you did come so that it's clear, so that you really understand the difference and find your way through. Because the habit of switching off means we lead a really kind of disconnected life. We're not engaged if we've shut down and numb. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, anybody? Yes, come. You might need to turn it on. Is it on?
I think it is now.
Yeah. Okay, welcome. What's your name?
My name is Dave.
Dave, hi.
Hi. I arrived on this path towards mindfulness. As an expression of hope after a past wrought with fear and suffering.
Yes.
For most of my life.
Yes.
And my inquiry is such that now that I'm opening more to experiencing what is and not how I see things necessarily, I experience immense impatience with myself and with my environment. That typically manifests in feeling inclined to abandon responsibilities that I took on before I was along this path. And I wish to know or wish for some help with facing this intense impatience with my thought and behavior patterns from before.
So when you look, do you see that your thought and behavior patterns are now unwise or they were before?
Both, but now I recognize them much more quickly.
Okay, so now you're seeing clearly the impatience and the self-judgment. Say a little more, if you would, about that.
Not only do I see more clearly the impatience and the self-judgment, I feel a desire to reconcile those with putting a lot of love in giving into the world.
Ah.
And I devote myself to that a lot.
What do you do to show love and give?
I hug strangers, for one. I receive compliments on my hugs frequently.
Okay.
I volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
I was an ambulance driver for a number of years.
Yes.
And I'm pursuing a volunteer opportunity in being a medical clown now.
Oh. He's...
I'm usually told that I speak too loudly, so yes.
Yeah. Speaking up a bit.
I will speak up a bit.
He said he's becoming a medical clown.
Yes. I'm also a parent.
Yes.
I get along with most animals and babies and many humans also, adult humans.
Okay.
I'm calm and easy to talk to.
Okay.
These are some of the ways in which I put love in the world to reconcile for what I believe is a difficult life for most of us.
Yes, indeed. Very true.
And I find myself yearning for being able to do this for myself and struggling to do so.
Okay, so it's rather easy for you to give and to help others, I hear. Your job as an ambulance driver is one of compassion, one of great responsibility, one of great service, and you've just described many other ways in which the love is expressed outwardly. Yet inwardly, there's a little barrier here, isn't there?
Considering where I come from, I do believe that I've made immense progress in showing myself love. It's impatience with the process of getting to where I want to be.
All right. So we have the view I want to be different from how I am. Yes?
I'm working on being different from how I am.
Yes, you're working on being different from how you are. But one of the things to work on is the impatience itself. Okay, what fuels impatience?
For me, I imagine it's suffering. It's judgment in my mind of what's going on now.
Yes, so it's the judgment that says what about yourself?
That I would like for things to be different.
Yes, go on.
That this is good or bad.
Yes.
Judgment in general.
Yes, we judge what I've done is good or what I've done is bad. I'd like things to be different. So this is desire, isn't it? Movement of desire. I want to be different from how I am.
The word should typically comes around as judgment.
I should. I should know better by now. I should be different by now. I should have worked this out.
Or it's even worse when I say that others should, because then I become hyper aware of my judgment.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we're looking inwardly for the moment. There's the self-criticism. I ought to be different from how I am.
With that comes a lot of empathy. My past was extremely intensely difficult.
Yes. Okay. So you understand that in the past, life was very painful. And somehow there's been this wonderful transformation where you have the capacity to live with love, and you have a dedication and a wanting to express it. The love is expressed rather easily outwardly. So please let the love flow inwardly right now. Oh, I see that it's beginning.
I've definitely also improved at offering myself empathy
and
accepting my difficulty with this process.
Yes.
But still there's impatience.
Yes. Still there's the wanting to be other than you are. This is impatience. I want myself to be different from how I am right now.
I'd like to bring an example. Every time I raise my voice at my kids, I beat myself up afterwards.
Yes. Mm.
And I don't know how to stop that. First, I don't know how to stop raising my voice at my kids occasionally because of certain thought and behavior patterns that I grew up with. And I don't know how to stop criticizing myself after I do that also.
Okay, so the pattern is entrenched. The conditioning from the past is to raise the voice and be authoritarian and tell the child what they should be doing and what they should not be doing. And then afterwards it comes with regret. Is there another way?
Regret and mourning, yes.
Yes.
If there are many other ways.
Yes. Okay.
Infinite other ways.
Yes. Yes. So let's hear some of them right now, because we don't want to live bound to our conditioning. Yes, it's true that your life has been difficult in the past. Yet, the conditioning of the mind to behave in certain ways doesn't need to be stuck with us. We can break through. We can live in a new way. We can not repeat the pattern of the previous generation.
I once learned a powerful exercise called creative anticipation, in which one enters a relaxed state and imagines a future event or interaction and how they would like for it to go in order to bring it closer into reality. And I feel like I have millions of creative anticipations I would like to perform and limited time. But yelling at my kids seems like a good one to deal with.
Okay. So instead of yelling at your kids, what will you do?
First, I'll breathe.
Yes. You'll breathe, you'll stop, you'll pause, put a little space, you'll breathe, then what?
It depends how intensely I'm experiencing this interaction. I may say, I can't do this right now, I need a minute, or I may approach it with empathy and understand my child's predicament that's leading to them to behave this way and empathize with that as opposed to...
That would be a good idea. So there's options. There's ways of being that aren't bound to the conditioning from the past.
Yes, but can I just do them already, please?
Pardon?
Can I just get them into my head already, please?
Yes, you want them.
All of them now?
All of them now. So again, this is the impatience. This is the self-criticism, the self-judgment.
It comes with sadness. Mm.
Okay. So just stopping for a minute here and just feeling that sadness. Not rushing on with analysis, but just letting the sadness be.
This leads me to the deep insight that life is beautiful and sucks a lot.
Move deeper. Resting into awareness. Resting into love itself. Resting into the friendliness that you can so freely offer others, except your children sometimes. And yourself a lot of the time. Okay. Interesting that those closest to us are the ones on the receiving end of our difficulty, our impatience. He said he feels like a child fighting against something he can't win.
And then there's a part of me that wants to hug this child, of course. Mm. Because, yes, there are fights that we can't win. Mm. That's how it is.
So as you start to rest more deeply within yourself, what happens to the impatience?
It's suspended temporarily.
Mm. Okay. So with the impatience suspended temporarily, we have the opportunity to explore in a more authentic way, in a way that's deeper, in a way that's not just bound to the superficial. We touch in deeply with the residue of the past. We see that we can have the possibility of freeing ourselves from it. We no longer need to be harsh with ourselves.
I feel doubts that I can really be free of the past.
Mm. I saw the doubt. Okay. So the I says, I cannot be free from the past. The thought formation says, I cannot be free from the past. Is there anything that you can think of right now that's in the past that you are now free of?
Yes.
Yes.
Many things.
So the view, I cannot be free of the past, is not true. You just told me the evidence. So we need to look at life without taking a standpoint, without clinging to a position. We need to see that life unfolds incredibly freely when we can let go of the standpoint or the position or the clinging to the self, the clinging to the self-view. So dropping altogether, please, I cannot be free of the past, because you know you can. You've done it already.
I am my past.
Ah, we feel we are the past, in that causes and conditions have contributed to this being here, this being here, and this form here. Yet, they're simply causes and conditions. We tend to say, I am my past. So we form the self around this body, this mind. We take a standpoint. The Dharma teaches us to see in a different way, not from the perspective of self. Now we're getting somewhere. So, dropping the I thought altogether. Letting go of the notion that I cannot change, because this notion I cannot change is the source of the impatience. The view, I can't be free of the past, I cannot change, solidifies the impatience. There's the wanting to change, there's the stuckness. The stuckness is based on the view I cannot change. Do you get it?
It feels like a need to differentiate between remembering and reconciling versus living the past.
Yes. We remember, we honor the past. We know that certain things have happened in the past that have been difficult. Yet, we don't need to live bound to them. And we need to see the views that keep our struggle in place. And the view, I cannot be free from the past, is a painful one.
It's difficult for me to separate between my thought and behavior patterns.
Yes.
And what taught them, what educated them.
Yes, that's the conditioned mind. The invitation in the Dharma world is to see that which is not bound to the conditions.
It is possible.
It is definitely possible. The new, the fresh is possible. When we stop thinking from a self-centered perspective, when the I thought isn't the center of what we're doing. When you are giving to others, the self, the I thought, has diminished, hasn't it? Yet when we look inwardly, I am impatient, I can't be free, the I thought's in the forefront of consciousness. That right there is the difficulty.
How to separate looking inward from the eye and my consciousness.
Ah. We look with awareness. We see all that arises without claiming any of it as me and mine. There's the key.
I am not this body and nor this mind.
Exactly. We have a mind, we have a body, but we are not that. I am not the body, not the mind. We really see directly, not self. And when we see this, we free ourselves from all the views and opinions we have about ourselves. I'm too impatient. I want to be different. I want to be different now. I'm bound to the past. And so on. So not taking a standpoint, not solidifying the self-view and the self-criticism. And the pathway is eased by love, by friendliness, by kindness, and you know that. So love outwardly and love inwardly is the recipe. Not claiming the thoughts and behaviors as me and mine, but looking more deeply.
I still find myself encountering a lot of fear.
Yes. And the fear is what? What fuels the fear?
Experience. The past.
Yes. So it's to loosen the grip of the view that the past will repeat itself. To know the Dharma is to look with fresh eyes, to see the new. Otherwise, we're stuck. Otherwise, we're stuck in the past. It involves letting go of the past. It involves letting go of the view. It involves letting go of self. Then we live with awareness, we live with love, and the love is expressed inwardly as well as outwardly. You are just on the brink, really just on the brink of really knowing that. Please trust and continue the practice. And thank you very much. Just sitting quietly for a minute. With all three inquiries today, I think we saw and noticed that both love and vulnerability are required. love freezes up, but it takes a certain sense of openness to the new and a vulnerability to shift beyond our slightly stuck places. With the first inquiry, we want perhaps intimacy, we want a close relationship. And this is going to require some fearlessness. It's going to require courage. It's going to require that tenderness of heart and that capacity to be with life in a way that's open. We don't know what's coming. We don't know whether we will have the wonderful relationship that we perhaps dream of. It's important that we have a rather free relationship with the whole of life. Then all of life is free, whether we're in an intimate, interpersonal relationship or not. So our freedom rests there, as I see it. And sometimes we just need to trust life. It can be difficult, but trust is a beautiful quality of the heart and mind, and it frees us up a little bit. And with the second inquiry, we heard about equanimity and how easy it is to mistake indifference for equanimity. We need to look and see for ourselves, not withdraw from life, not shut down, not switch off, be open and embrace life fully. Inquire, explore any contraction we have by coming to the body, and then see how things unfold. And with the third inquiry, of course, we need to see the whole construct and notion of self. We need to understand that there's a way of being where we're not bound to the past, where we don't need to rest in our conditioned responses to our children or otherwise. And we see how easy it is to judge inwardly, to be impatient. And it takes a certain sense of fearlessness and vulnerability and openness, these beautiful qualities of the heart, to set ourselves free so that we can be with life in a way that's liberated, a way that's free, but a way that's also ethical and filled with love. So love and compassion are not only expressed outwardly, but also inwardly. And love and compassion in their deepest sense are selfless. They're immeasurable qualities of the heart and mind. So thank you, each of you, for your very patient listening. And thank you to all three who inquired today. It's time for walking meditation.